The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Motivation and Muscle, streaming radio 24/7. Today is the 21st of March, 2017. Go out to FiorelloBarbellCo.com. Check out our three brand new products. Number one, the Winner's Circle. Those are 12 audios of me speaking about the stuff I love to do, how to do it, and obviously it will instruct you in many, many ways. If you buy that product, you will get a 13th audio free called, well, as you all like to know, I love to say we are the gatekeepers, we are the stewards of strength, and that's the name of it, and I got some pretty exciting stuff that I talked about on that. Secondly, we had called it educator teacher, but we are going to change that to teacher, well, it'd be more like teacher student, because that is a program there that we will train you with anything you want to do. And it bleeds right into our biggest thing where we're only going with 8 people initially, called Etched in Stone. This is a program, we've all seen it all over the place, but sandbags and stones have been very prevalent in what I've been doing with a lot of people I've been training. And if you've been following Dennis for the last 6-8 weeks, Dennis came here again at 271 pounds, a very unhealthy body fat. The best way to describe it, he looked like he was 9 months pregnant, right underneath the breastbone where a lot of men get that. It goes right down, you know, past your navel, or they get the spare tire, or it looks like they have both. Well, I've done the typical things with, we got the best body weight program, I think, here that we use, and we use the power rack a lot, and of course, weights, which help, you know, but they weren't moving them quick enough. And I know him, especially metabolically, it takes him a while to get going. And I had to be very careful with him this time because I was afraid at times if I pushed him too hard, I'd kill him. And I'm not kidding you when I say that. So I didn't want to bring in sandbags initially till at least March or April. But I felt at the rate he was going, we had to make some moves and move him quick because I want him to take him down from 271 and have him 200 by the end of June. Then we will do... we will absolutely uncork the champagne bottle and run him for 6 months with a program like I've never seen out there that I've been waiting to unleash for a long time, and I've used this on myself for years. It'll be phenomenal. So the sandbags and the stones now are fully incorporated in what we're doing. We do have video out there, but if you want a program that's going to deliver men of 40, 50, 60-year-olds, and even young men, 20-year-olds, we can take this and put it right across the board. I feel that this is going to be, this will rock the strength world with what we're doing. And I'm sure a lot of people have done things like this, but I'm sure I've never seen anybody put together a program the way I've done it. So check that all out. And I hope you're interested in getting in on this with us. There is a fee, obviously, but you know what? Health is the most paramount thing in your life. Don't let anybody kid you. Also, go out to motivationmuscle.com/category/podcast. We got our good friend Charlie Oliphant on today. This will be Charlie's second appearance on the show. As everybody knows, I'm going to give Charlie's bio, but Charlie has graced us his time because he's over in Scotland, and it's a little bit later than 6:19, and I greatly appreciate it. Let me give you a little info on this gentleman. Let me just bring it up here. Here we go. He's a stone lifter, a farmer, Highland Games competitor, and I want to welcome him to the show. And one thing he's doing, if you didn't go back, and I'm going to put the show up in the next few days, the introduction show, go out and see what he does with kids. I'm telling you right now, you got to go out and go to the Ard Blair Stones. Go out and Google that and see what he does with these kids, and obviously adults and all in between. We talk about kids here. We talk about my nephew with the sandbags and how it's growing through three-five-year-olds, a three-year-old. It's absolutely revolutionary what we're going to do. And I can't tell you enough how happy I am to have Charlie here, because not only is he a brutal stone lifter, he's a good man, and he's doing great things out there. And we're going to talk about steel and stone, and this is going to be a little bit what he and I are messing around with, muscling around with to get ready. But before we do that, Charlie, welcome back, brother, and anything I missed in the bio, don't hesitate, put it out, and we're going to get into today's show, if you would, please.
Well, thank you very much for having me again, Eric. It's a pleasure to be on your show, and I think everything that you said in the introduction was pretty accurate and flattering as well, so thank you very much for
that. Well, you deserve it, man. I mean, you know, I'm not afraid to, you know, we got to be honest about things, and we've got to lead by example and motivate, because we've been very lucky, and I hope the rest of our lives, obviously, we make our own luck, but I hope you and I and everybody else associated with the show at least live to 100 or 120 and still can lift. I always say, give me a squat bar with 250 at 100 years old and I'm done. Let me drop on the platform and I'll see you in Valhalla or wherever I'm going to end up. So I think there's so much to all this we talk about. Everyone knows, well, if they haven't listened yet, they know that you're going to go lift the Dinnies. Was that in June of this year you're looking at, Charlie?
It's actually a bit further than that. It was going to be August.
Okay,
but,
August.
I had a sort of slight revelation since then, which was that recently, this last Saturday, I went down to Glasgow to visit a friend of mine, and they have some mock Dinny stones in their garden. And I've done 10 months of... 10 weeks of fairly intensive training geared towards the Dinnies, and I discovered with these mock stones that my friend Stephen Murray he has, we were basically trying to see what I was capable of.
Yep.
After these weeks of fairly intensive training, which is a program which my friend Andy Kearney we've talked about, and he's got me on.
Yep.
I was quite surprised, and actually, because we were practicing lifting the things, and he had weight plates on it to make it heavier, and then he had sandbags on it to make it heavier, and then he had dumbbells on to make it heavier. so and then we kind of ran out of things to lift.
Yeah.
So and we sort of worked out that I was just 10 kilograms short of the Dinnies.
Wow.
So I mean, so you know, I'm supposed to be doing it in August, but I'm in a slight quandary at the moment because I don't know about sort of peaking too early, or whether I should actually sustain this intensity for such a long period of time.
Okay.
Because on the face of it, I've kind of surprised myself without wishing to seem arrogant or anything, because I'm really not doing that. It's just I've obviously come on a lot further than I thought, so I'm in a slight quandary as to whether or not I should actually do them a bit earlier, because intense training for that period of time is quite a tall order.
Yeah, and not only that, that's a nice thing to have, isn't it? You know, I'm a little bit ahead of schedule, and look out. I think that's a great thing to have. This is real interesting, because I know you did make the comment that you were improving some body parts you felt that needed it to do these stones. We'll both get into a little bit what we're doing, but I'm very interested. I know that you're working the upper back. You felt that was an area that needed improvement, but... You know, not only with the Dinnies, you've lifted a lot of other stones, but you've definitely now keyed in on some areas you want to obviously make stronger. And obviously it's working when you're this far ahead. I mean, we're only at, you know, mid to late March now. Tell everybody out there, what was it you felt that you were not where you wanted to be body part-wise or as a whole? And just, if you don't mind, I mean, you don't have to give away the trade secrets if you don't want to, but... Kind of tell everybody, you know, what were you up against? What did you feel you had to do? And obviously, you've implemented this stuff sterling to get where you are. So take it away.
Well, I'd say that the biggest area that I needed to sort of work on, now, as I said before on the original chat that we had, the podcast.
Yep.
I mean, none of it's awful. It's really a question of sort of fine tuning and improving in certain areas. There's always room for improvement in anything that you do, obviously.
Sure.
So I would say in my case, I always found it fairly easy to get a stone or something heavy into my lap.
Okay.
But then it's the transition from getting your back to the standing with it on your chest. Now, I mean, as I say, I'm going to quantify this by saying that, you know, it's not a serious thing, but I just felt in my mind that it could be more fluid and I could strengthen my upper back.
Okay.
And allow for that the lap to standing transition. So in that instance, I've got a very specific sort of training routine, which is sort of geared towards addressing that. And actually, before anything started, I realized that certain of my techniques had to change anyway. Because when I was doing things like squats, for instance, I was doing it more of an Olympic style. And anything that I do, whether it's outside or lifting stones, I'm not using sort of deadlifting shoes or shoes with high heels or anything. It's always pretty much a stand trainer or flat sort of thing.
Yep.
So I had to completely change my stance to allow for that. So instead of doing an Olympic type squat, I was more or less doing a wide stance squat, which then and having and more of a powerlifting squat. So having the bar further down my back, obviously, and not as high up on my traps. And focusing on the descent, sort of pushing my knees out over my toes on the descent.
Yep.
And basically, I had to sort of relearn a few exercises and to sort of protect myself to an extent, and to allow myself to physically push more weight, which has been quite effective. And that's been a huge thing. So was that. And you know, just focusing on deadlifts and things, a fairly basic exercise, and, you know, concentrating on rolling back on your heels when you're lifting and, you know, try and stay off the toes, which is a fairly basic, you know, element, and being fluid. And, I really have Andy Kearney to thank for all this information. He's been great, and obviously he's got world records in powerlifting, so
that helps. And obviously shoring up your form is huge. I mean, you know, obviously that's great when you got somebody of that caliber, somebody that can watch you do things, and it sets everything off. I mean, suddenly your squat feels right to you, suddenly your deadlift is right to you. You know what I've been doing a lot more lately too? Well, I'll start with this. I have no idea now when we're going to Scotland, Iceland, and Wales, mainly because of with the business right now. Obviously, we know it costs a lot of money to travel, et cetera, et cetera. We can turn this thing around real quick with a few things, and that's what we're in the midst of. Now, I'm still training with the idea I'm leaving, no matter what. Now, I don't know what I'm going to meet up with in Scotland and where Martin's going to want to go everywhere. I mean, honestly, when we initially talked, he was talking about doing all the stones that they did in the Rogue documentary. I'm good with anything. Obviously I want to do the Dinnies and the Inver no matter what. But there is one place I want to go in Iceland, and it will take a few more days, and that's something I haven't even talked to him about. I want to go over to Latra, and I want to deal with the stone that tore my bicep. And there's officially five stones there. The three have to be put up on a huge stone pedestal. And if I remember, I tore it on the biggest one. And I think there's three of them. I think they start around 240, I want to say it was either 370 or 390. Then you walk down these stairs, and the Judas stone is there. Then you go down a little further, and unless anything's changed, there's this huge column they call the column stone, literally envision a column, and I was always told it weighed 600 pounds, and the idea is to see if you can pull it up as little or as much as you can, hopefully without moving the wrong way, and the thing come down and pancake you, and that's the end of you. So, obviously, to do that, it's on the other side of the fjords. It's probably at least a five-hour drive down roads that are one lane, dirt. Obviously, the stones are falling off. You know, there's the element of danger, which I love. And, you know, if you're going there and you veer a little bit over too far to the right, you're going about 3,000 feet into the drink, and they're never going to find you again, probably. So That's a big thing, but I would love to go there and even that score up too after lifting the Husafell. Now, obviously, to do all this stuff, I don't know how many stones in Scotland. I didn't count when I watched the Rogue documentary, but there's plenty. And then Martin's got 3 stones, I believe, in Wales. So to do this, you know, I've been, you know, obviously I'm feeling pretty healthy now. Been able to start back squatting dead stop again, working on some very high numbers. Incorporated a few other things. Good mornings. We do the tri-quad dead stop squat, which for anybody that's heard me talk about it, you have no arms holding the bar. Basically, it's on your traps. You're going to start in a parallel position, which on my power rack is 12 pin. And you're going to have to use a bar that you don't care about knurling on, because you want to set this bar as close to the posts as you can. And basically, when you come up, you want to more or less drag it. Now, the beauty of this is it's one hell of a lift, but the big thing is you got to be an athlete, in my opinion, to do this, because you can't stand all the way up with it, because what's going to happen, ladies and gents, it's going to roll right off the back of your traps. So you can get up almost all the way with this thing, but this is a brutal lift. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, you ought to be front squatting for stones. I'm very mixed on that. I do think it's beneficial, but I still like the back squat or some other form we're doing here. Now, obviously, I've woven in a lot of things. I use a glute ham machine in a different way than probably most people. I'm very big on neck. Obviously, fingers are so vital for lifting any of that stuff, especially if you got to dig your fingers into a stone. That's going to be the make or break, in my opinion, for you. Obviously, you know, we know you need a hip girdle, and you need the back, and you need the shoulder girdle and all that. But, you know, I still think, and I'm going to ask you this momentarily, because I've talked, you know, to buddies of yours like Stevie and Martin and all these guys. And if Martin's got a little bit different feel for stones, where, you know, he's a tire flipper. He believes that is the main ingredient to be a successful stone lifter. I asked Stevie Shanks, what's going to make you lift a stone? He says, the bigger and stronger your back is. I said, okay, so tell me what you like. He says, dumbbell deadlifts. Dumbbells are very prevalent. I do dumbbell presses dead stop with a 2-inch bar, and I also do rows and deadlifts. So they're in the mix. But you can never take away from lifting your actual stone. So what I've done is, whether I'm lifting it as a partial out of the power rack, or if I've got it dangling from chains outside from the 6x6 wood that's built, it's lagged right into the garage wall below the frost line, you might have a hard time ripping it out of the ground with a tank. I mean, it's buried, cemented, everything. That's just a metaphor, obviously. Absolutely brutal. Or we have multiple stations where they could be all different heights, and we can run all 3 stones. But what I've been doing, and I'm going to be doing this for probably the next month, is I'm going to lift the stone every day, every other day, or every 2 days. And I'm going to build everything around that stone for a month and just see how things pan out. Now, am I going to be doing like I did the other day, where I had it maybe 6 inches above my ankles and I ripped the 370 Husa steel off the ground? No, I'm not going to be, because I'm not going to last long like that. What I am going to do is I'm going to go by how I feel. And that's mainly, we'll do our warm-up and we'll start right in with our stone, whether it's walking it, pulling it, barreling it, you name it. I've got everything here, and I've got some pretty cool stuff I do. And I'm going to film all of it so everybody can see what we do here, preparing for that journey. I think that the weights have to be brought into everything. I do things back and forth. Sometimes a month I'll go berserk with the weights, and I'll go moderate with the stones, and I just describe the vice versa. But as I get closer and closer to going away, obviously, other than probably squats and grip and neck, the stone will be 95 feet up and back, paramount, at all different weights, at all different barrels, at all different threes of them. So I'm a big believer, you know, however you want to run it, might go heavy as hell for the first 25 feet. Then we go very, very light. And by light, I mean maybe we go from a 375 stone to 155. Why? Because I want to recover. And I want to bring my recovery up that much quicker. Then we grab one, say, around 250 and go the rest. And then we start back with the whole thing all over again. Now, as I get better and better with this, my best friend with Dennis especially is an egg timer. And I'm training him like a fighter right now. We're up to almost 2-minute rounds for anything we're doing, whether it's stones, could be sledgehammer, it could be going ballistic with sandbags, it could be in the power rack if you saw. I was running him rounds of about 1.5 minutes where he had to take the Hoosa steel stone at a partial level in that rack and lift it through bands, meaning I had the bands in an X factor in the power rack and he had to pull through those. So he was pulling pretty hard. That egg timer, when he gets up to 3 rounds consistently and many, he should be 200 pounds of just like solid granite by the end of this year. So these are some of the things I do. I believe in these wholeheartedly, and we'll even get into this more through the show. Charlie, I know I laid a ton on you, but comment on anything you agree or disagree, add to it, whatever you got, my friend, nail us with it.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with anything that you're doing, Eric, because it seems very quite far removed from the stuff that I'm doing, but I think a lot of that is because you have different equipment, and yeah. you're obviously making the best of what you have, and what you have is great. Whereas I tend to be sort of using more kind of traditional methods in the gym when I'm training.
Yep.
Although what you're doing sounds absolutely marvelous, and it obviously is very effective. For myself, I mean, it's basically what I'm doing is sort of a range of wide stance squats, some sumo dive bombs to get the speed up. Sort of wide stance deadlifts, barbell rows, dumbbell yep. curls. One of the things that has been new to me, which I've been experimenting with, but it does make for very, very long workouts.
Okay,
is like doing 100 reps and splitting it up into sets.
Yeah.
So, for instance, to sort of toughen up ligaments and things, and to sort of get my body used to it, to sort of minimize a tear or something in my biceps.
Yep.
Then I'll take a weight. I don't know. Let's say 20 kilograms dumbbells in each arm, for instance.
Yep.
And then I'll do 100 reps on each arm.
Yep.
But as long as I do them, that's fine. Now you could either do say 10 sets of 10 or 2 sets of 50.
Absolutely.
Whatever it is you want to
yeah.
do. But the thing is to do it,
yeah.
and I always allow myself to totally recover between sets, so that I feel that I can go in and do it. Because as long as I do it, that's the main thing. And I think it's actually been quite an effective method for me. And there's been a couple of times on the program where I've maybe had to do 2 exercises where I have to do 100 reps on some body part.
Yep.
Now, I think it's a good thing, and you feel very satisfied and obviously rewarded once you finished it.
Sure.
But it does make for very long workouts
yeah.
if you want to do it properly and recover.
Yeah.
And so you've got you're prepared for the next set, because it is tough. You know, it can be a mental thing as well, sort of ticking off the things in the book and
yeah.
you know, and then the frustration that you can't remember, did you tick that one off or not?
Yeah.
Yeah. You might be on like the 60 or something, and you think,
yep.
Did I do that 10 or not? And then
yep.
you.
Yep.
Wrestling with yourself, maybe you're going to be doing 110 by the time this is finished. But anyway, the important thing is to do it. And I was speaking to Andy about it.
Yeah.
And I'd always kind of be led to believe in the past that when you're in the gym, you wanted to kind of make it short and sharp, say no more than about an hour or something.
Yep.
But then Andy, it's to sort of maximize your testosterone levels and what you can do. But Andy was telling me that that's really more a bodybuilding thing,
mm-hmm.
and he was of the opinion, and I suppose and I agree with him, that if you're specifically thinking of strength, then it's acceptable to have longer workouts and allow yourself to recover between sets.
Yes.
And let's say these workouts take a long time, and you have to be patient with them. And you know, if we're being realistic here, they can take several hours for
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it can have an effect on your normal life. And if you have a wife or kids or work colleagues, they really need to sort of be patient with you.
Yeah.
And especially when these 100 rep cycles come up. But they're not every week. They're not all the time. But nevertheless, when they're in there, you have to be prepared for them. But I think they've been effective. And if somebody told me that I was going to be doing 100 reps, I mean, I'm not talking about light weights here.
No.
I'm talking like decent weights.
Yeah.
That you might need a few minutes between sets to give yourself the confidence to get back in there.
Absolutely.
And I'll tell you one thing as well. If you do these exercises, it does make you realize afterwards what your body is capable of.
Oh, yeah.
And your confidence.
Oh, yeah.
And you think when you've done it for the first time, you'll think, it'll give you a real boost because you'll realize it's not impossible. You can do it.
Yep.
And then, you've done these 100 reps, which you have. It's a great feeling.
Yeah.
So although it sounds bizarre and it's intense and everything, and I imagine if you were standing in a commercial gym and you saw somebody behaving like this, you'll probably think, what on earth are they doing?
Yeah.
But it's a good thing, and it's good to shock your body as well.
Yeah, I agree.
You never know what's around the corner.
No.
And one of the things I particularly like about the training program on at the moment is it's not very predictable. I could be doing Zurches, could be in there, front squats.
Yep.
Dumbbell rows.
Yep.
I mean, there's a whole myriad of different things, and it keeps my body guessing, and it stops me getting into a cycle, which can create problems because your body knows what's going to happen, and it just switches off, and it just becomes, it just becomes a routine thing.
Yeah, you get in those holding patterns, and that's it, and that's when you get in trouble. Now, let me ask you, with the 10 sets of 10 or whatever you're doing on that point. Are you doing that? That could be for any movement, because I know what you talked about, the 20-kilo curls for your biceps. Are you using that on other body parts too?
Well, I'm just flicking through my training manual at the moment.
Yep.
The 100 rep thing is sort of very. It was hammer curls that I did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to look. There was another exercise. I'm trying to remember.
Tell you one thing. Take it from a guy that tore a bicep. Now. I did bicep work, but not to the degree I probably should have, because I was always like, the smaller muscles will follow the bigger ones, but I was never lifting stones to the extent that I was when that happened. Now, I'm positive I pulled that stone wrong. I'm sure probably I had my arm bent, and it was pretty cold out that day too, because we were right on the ocean. I mean, the water was banging off basically the side of the cliff and coming up. No excuse either. But I make sure that I do train my biceps. Now, it might not be every week, might be every other week, but I'll tell you another thing I train very heavy is I train my forearms. And I found one of the things that helped me really cradle a stone very hard and squeeze it. Because other than the dinnies, everything you got to pick up, squeeze, if you're putting it on your shoulder, whatever you're doing, is I love doing standing reverse curls with an Apollon axle. I do it for two reasons, and I don't always use it because I like to see at times what I can get close to with a maximum weight. But it's a twofold thing. Not only are you going to build that muscle belly there, but you're also going to get your grip. And I try to take things and compress them together somewhat. So if I can do a thick bar and do a reverse curl or a seated, wrist curl or whatever I do, look, I'm getting the fingers, I'm getting the squeeze on the hand, the whole deal. So I like doing things like that. But there's one reason I like doing a thicker bar, especially if I'm doing a lot of heavy work that night. Is it's going to have a limiting factor on me. And most people say, well, why do you want to limit your lifting? Well, everybody, listen, biceps are small. Forearms, they look great. They get big, but, it's not a quad you're training there. And what I try to do is just, I'm working at least one or two fairly big body parts, going substantially heavy on them. I just can't see taking every movement and trying to go balls to the wall with it. because we know the factors that happen. You know, I want to recover within a day or two and come back. I don't want any more bicep tears. I don't want anything with the finger, because, you know, you tear something in a finger, you got big trouble, especially if you gotta be, if you want to be a stone lifter. And those ligaments and tendons are hard to heal when you start messing around with that stuff. And then, most of all, I just like the feel of the thick bar. Because, as you know, we talk so much about central nervous system here and all that, especially when we talk about squatting and twisting and getting under it and, you know, banging your traps a little bit under it and the breathing and all that. Well, that's what I like about thick bar action, too. It's like you got to bite your hands into it real hard, and you got to really activate your head, and you got to know when that switch goes, time, and you go and do your work. Charlie, I'll tell you something. I haven't even said this to anybody yet. Well, Steven Santangelo knows a little bit about it, and that's who sent me some bands. I do a really unique either. I've been really perfecting it on days off. And I use a York short bar, which is the one-inch bar from many, many years ago. In fact, it's got the old chrome sleeve on it. That's how old it is. And Steven's bands. And I found a great way, and you can use this for a warm-up too, depending on what you want to do and how long you want to do it for. I like using it on off days, where basically I take and complement the band with the bar. Usually I'll use either an empty bar or maybe add 2 5-pound York plates on it. And why? Because you don't need to be going balls to the wall of this stuff. And when you use these two in conjunction with each other, you want to talk about cleaning the debris out of your bloodstream, your musculature, your ligaments and tendons, and most of all, it goes in and does like a clean sweep of your brain. I'm going to be releasing more of this as time goes on, but I'm going to tell you right now, it is by far one of the best things I've ever done, like on a next day and a next day after. And what I plan on doing with this long before I leave, I plan on progressing with this thing where I'll be able to at least do it maybe 2 to 3 off days per week, preferably 3. And not only will I gain strength in the gym when I go after the big stuff, but I do believe I can sharpen my muscles up very, very good with this, tighten up even more, and exhibit more strength. So I know once again that was a lot, but take it away, my friend. Comment on anything.
Well, yeah, I mean, referring back to earlier, briefly touching on the 100 rep exercises.
Yeah.
The other ones that I've been doing 100 reps with is a front plate raise and dumbbell side laterals. For anybody who may be interested, I just thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, can I just quickly say one thing, Eric?
Whatever you want, brother.
Can I just do a quick shout out to Paul T in Wales?
Paul.
You mentioned Wales earlier, and I should have mentioned it then, because I know you're thinking of going to Wales to do some stones. But
no, that's
just
it.
To say, you know, thanks for getting in touch. And,
yeah.
And I'll send.
Go ahead.
So I'll send him an email, because he's written to me, and I'll get back in touch with him, and if I can give him any pointers about training and things, then I'm happy to do that. Well, so just hi.
No, Paul. I mean, I'm glad, because he had sent me some stuff, and you know, I told him before I can give anything out about somebody, I have to clear it. I cleared it with Charlie. Now, Paul sent a great picture of him lifting his Z-stone, and we put that up on our new page, which is called Etched in Stone, out on Facebook. And I've gone back and forth with Paul for a while. Great guy. He's doing some great things with his oatmeal, or porridge, they call it. Phenomenal stuff. He's going to come to Charlie's event, and he's going to lift stones, and I couldn't be happier. And, you know, this is what it's all about. This is the idea that we are building this family here of people all over the world, and people that never knew one another, including myself. Now we're making friendships with people, even though, you know, Charlie's in Scotland, I'm in upstate New York in the United States, okay? We can't be much further than that, but yet we've built a relationship already. Charlie's on here for the second time. Charlie, Paul, myself, everybody is just doing great things. And I can't say it again. I said this in the beginning of the show about Charlie. Charlie and I definitely have a soft spot for kids, and we want to see these kids grow into either great men or great women, become leaders. If they choose to do this stuff, which I would be more than happy, we want them to be the best they can be. And that is what's so vital. And when you see people like Paul T and, you know, Charlie and everybody else and the magnificent things they're doing, and then we wind it all together with what we're doing with our training and the goals and the love for the things we want to do, how could you not want to go out and do something? I mean, I always say, if you're not inspired by things like that, you better go get yourself checked out or check to see if you have a pulse. Because I'm not saying you have to go out and lift a 330-pound Atlas stone or a 418-pound Husafell stone. But what I am saying is go out and do something that you want to do. Start with small steps. Charlie even went back. You heard, now, Charlie's no rookie to training. What did Charlie do? He started back with the basics again. I can't lay this foundation down on anybody enough, because I mention it, so does everybody else. The squat, the deadlift, and you can press any way you want. I preferably like overhead, but if I do a bench press, as they call it, I do a dead stop floor press. My power racks are lagged right into the cement floor, and there's a platform it's lagged through. I lay right on that platform and bang it right off the long rods, because as we know, that was another thing I was going to get into. But I want to get back to Charlie, because I interrupted him after Paul T. But, you know, one thing you want to do, especially if you lift Husafells and walk with them, you want to have a good set of pecs. And I mean, not the big, big pecs. I'm talking, you want to work close grip. Because I'm telling you right now, I hope someday, if you're not doing it, all of you want to make a pilgrimage all over there. And you go after the Husafell and you train for it here, wherever you are. I'm going to tell you right now, you start getting real heavy with that stone and walking distance, it feels like there's an elephant on your chest when you're walking. So you've got to even do things to build the chest area. And I feel, and I believe from my own experience, the close grip bench press is one of the best movements you could ever do to build that capacity. I also like doing the old school pullovers. You can do them off a bench with a curling bar. I have a specific, I have an actual pullover bench that's made for that. You can do the old school stuff they used to do in York Barbell with the straight arm pullover with a 1-inch bar. That is not a movement where most people make the mistake of adding monster weights on with it. Good way to blow your shoulders out, but if you do that very, very well, you can build a rib cage. A lot of people like to lay over the middle of the bench and pull them with a dumbbell. I've never been a fan of that. It's a good way to lose your teeth if something ever happened. But getting back, and I'll go right to you, Charlie, rib cages are very important. The bigger your rib cage is, think about it, the more air you can suck in and push out. We know what that does, especially if you're yanking off the floor, especially. Breathing is vital. If you don't do it, we know you turn blue, and that's the end of you. Go ahead, Charlie. It's yours.
Eric, do you might just refer back to you talking about you like to use sort of fat bar work, you know, for grip. And yep. You were mentioning earlier, like, overhead presses and things, and I think the comfort sometimes of using a fat bar, like for an overhead press or something, but it's a thing that's, it made me think about callus formation.
Sure.
Because one of the things that I've been having a slight issue with is calluses.
Yep.
And just constantly shaving them. And I was sort of doing some research onto it to see how I could improve that, because the amount of times I was having to shave.
Sure,
my hands,
absolutely.
It would just seem ridiculous. So I sort of did some research, and I'm sort of in two minds about this, because on the one hand, you can actually avoid a callus formation on your hand if you have the bar lowered down towards your fingers. Because
yep.
If you think, when you're gripping a bar, then if you have it at the lowest place in your hand already, then you're not pushing down that skin and creating that callus formation.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, personally, I find that if it is pushing down on my skin on my hand, I don't know if it's a psychological thing, but I feel that bunched up skin under my fingers on the bar gives me a more sense of security.
Yeah.
Because to me it acts like a ledge, if you like.
Yeah.
And but then the downside of that is that over a prolonged period of time, if you've got an intensive training thing going, and as I have for the last few weeks, then it's unavoidable. You're going to get a callus formation, and that could, if you get a bad callus, that could really set you back if it comes off.
Oh yeah, that's why we say out here, we try not to, if that starts happening. That's why super glue is our best friend.
Yeah,
that's
certainly an option.
Yeah,
certainly it's probably better than sort of crude attempts to find the nearest sharp thing that you can to
exactly
remove it. You know, which I'm sure everybody's been tempted to do that on occasion. But yeah, that was an important thing, because I could see a situation going there where it was just going to get out of hand.
Yep.
And if I just forgot to do. You know, forgot to look after my hands and treat them well, then that could have a seriously negative impact on my next training session. It's really not worth it.
Yeah, and especially too, you know, when you're doing the 100 reps, the last thing you want to do is have a callus start letting go on you, because we know what happens. I mean, you know, I've trained with guys doing deadlifts. They split, and, you know, you got a piece of meat hanging there, and you can't lift, man. You're done. You know, it's bleeding. It's open, and they're very hard to heal up in like a day or two. So I agree with you totally. I mean, like yourself, I guess a nail file can be a guy's best friend at times, right?
Yeah, I mean, quite honestly, I mean, I'd be careful to advise this, because obviously you have to be really, really careful what you're doing.
Yep.
But quite honestly, I've used knives before, but I've been really, really careful. I mean, I'm not suggesting that people do this, because you know, it's obviously there's hazards associated with it, but sometimes it just seems to be the most effective way to get them off there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Callus build-up, important thing, and obviously, you know, they're very important, and to try and keep them supple and work lanolin into them occasionally.
Sure. You know, when you think about it, and we don't think about it a lot, but think about how important your feet and your hands are to every endeavor we do. And we don't put emphasis on taking care of them, I don't think, like we do everything else. I mean, without your feet, without being able to push through your feet, without having healthy ankles, obviously you want to have the right footwear, the right socks to wear, you know, your toes, everything. When we're talking hands, just think of all the things we're doing with our hands, man. Not only lifting, you know, the stones and the rings and the barbell and the thick stuff and all that. I mean, just think about all the wear and tear you put on those hands. And it's like, to do anything and be successful, if I was going to tell anybody, if they asked me, I'll tell you right now, you better take damn good care of your hands and feet, because you're going to be lost in this sport without it. So go ahead, back to you.
I mean, in the early days when I first started weight training, I naively thought the complete opposite. I mean, I was totally inexperienced.
Yeah.
I was under the impression that you wanted your hands to be tough.
Yep.
And if the hands started, the skin started to get tough.
Yep.
And I'd think, oh, this is great. I've got tough hands, and this is going to really help me because the skin's tougher.
But
actually, it's quite the opposite.
Yep.
It's quite the opposite.
It is totally opposite.
And you really want to keep those hands soft and pliable and supple and smooth.
Yeah.
So if anybody's out there and they're starting, you really want to keep those calluses down, because and I said, not only is there the danger as well of them potentially ripping off.
Yeah.
There's also if you do get a good build up, then and you're lifting a bar, honestly, the pain from, like, it feels like a pebble or a stone could be at the base of your fingers, and you really don't want that, and it's not a good thing, and it's going to totally distract you from what you're doing. So yeah, it's very important to keep your hands to keep your calluses down, and don't be persuaded to think it's tough and manly to have these things, because it's really not going to help you.
Yeah, it's not manly when one of those things blow off and you can't hold whatever you got your hands around, you know. What I mean, whoops. You know what I want you to tell everybody too, because I don't think we talked about this with Stevie either. Obviously, everybody's, if you haven't seen Denny Stones, go out and Google them and look at what they look like. You know, you can find out the weights of them, singular and combined. But look how, when you see the chain coming out of the stone, And then you see the rings. Tell everybody, you know, especially you just did, even though they were more or less replicas, they're still going to have that round ring. And I've got those that, well, David Horn just brought them back, but I got them years ago, and I've got them here that are the actual rings. Tell everybody how that feels, because, I mean, I know how they feel when they start getting heavy, where they feel like they're going to come right through your fingers, literally. But tell everybody when you got a full load, like you did recently, what does that ring feel? Have you built enough power in those fingers? And we talk about calluses and keeping your hands supple and strong like that. Tell everybody out there what that feels, if you can describe it, Charlie, when you go to pull those two beasts up.
Well, like you, I have a set of David Horn replicas at my house here as well, which I've been training with. I noticed the David replica, the David Horn replicas, that they've also got different thicknesses in the in the handles.
Yep.
You probably noticed that, Eric. There's a
sort
of thinner one for the lighter one and a thicker one for the heavier one.
Yep.
And that thicker
handle, yeah.
It's it can be an issue.
Yeah.
But honestly, when I was at the Stephen Murray's house and
yep.
I had these sort of replica dinnies and I was working with them, the weather was great. My hands were really well chalked up. I had
yep.
a really good grip. And honestly, I believe that my legs would have, I was fine. I was really lucky.
Yeah.
I basically had the flesh. I had the flesh of my thumb
yep.
on the ring. And I was sort of, when you're sort of sitting, if you say you're sitting in a chair now, if people are listening
yep.
and they kind of imagine a hook grip. So the thumb's kind of going across the hand
yep.
under the fingers.
Yep.
Me personally, my most comfortable position, and I sort of experimented with this for a bit, is to have the thumb sort of straight up with the first finger kind of over the knuckle of the thumb.
Okay.
I this is just me. I mean, maybe other people are different, but I didn't really want to put my thumb too far across.
Right.
I didn't really want to have three fingers on my thumb because
right.
I felt there's too much strain in the joints.
Yep.
But having it straight vertical up and then pinching the fingers down over the top seems to work for me. And when you first do the hook grip, you think this isn't going to work,
right.
It just feels a bit strange, but just as soon as you put pressure on that, you'll realize the benefits and the advantages of it.
Yeah,
because you're just locked into that.
Yep.
And I know people have had problems with hook grips and the discomfort and the pain. Now, whether or not it's the length of my fingers
right,
or
right.
whatever, I seem to be quite lucky.
Yeah.
I seem to have been very fortunate in as much that I can kind of get away with it.
Yeah.
And without too much discomfort.
That's awesome. But you know what I want to
yeah.
ask you, too? This is interesting when you talk about the hook grip. We got in a big discussion. Bill Hinburn and I were talking about, I don't remember what show it was. It might have been something to do with Thomas Inch, because I've got one of them here. I've only got it a few inches off the ground. But it's just another thing I don't have time right now to dedicate to with everything else. But let me ask you this, especially with the Dinnies, because I know for a fact the weak point normally on the Inch dumbbell is the thumb. And one of the things that I have found that works very well to train the thumb, and I don't know if they still make it because I haven't looked in a long time, was Titan's Telegraph from Iron Mind, Randy Strassen. And I love doing that because I'll loop the finger over and push the weight down with it and train that thumb. Now, and I don't know if you've ever thought about it, and this will be interesting because I can't wait to hear your comments, especially with a hook grip. Does the thumb have a lot of precedent with lifting the Dinnie stones, in your opinion, or have you never thought about it like that, Charlie?
When you say precedent, Eric, how would you sort
well,
of mean
well, that? You know, well, do you put it this way? Do you need a strong thumb? Is the thumb like, you know, that we'll compare, even though it's totally different lift with the ring, and then obviously
yeah.
when you're lifting inch dumbbell, because that's the thing will spin out of your hand without a strong thumb. Is the thumb vital to lift the Dinny stones with those two different style thickness rings, in your opinion?
Well, Eric, it's you said, is it something I maybe never thought about? And,
okay,
and
well,
maybe, but it's not. But my instincts,
yeah,
are to tell me if I was put on the spot,
yep,
would that I really don't think that is so critical.
Okay,
I think your thumb is just there,
okay,
to provide a lock,
okay,
and I think that probably your four fingers over the top are probably actually under most strain, and I think the thumb is just basically there.
Okay.
As you're just kind of squashing,
right?
Just in
hook
the way.
It. Yeah.
So, but that's my take.
No, that's fine. Let me ask you this though: when you lift those, how? I mean, I'm just thinking about pulling something big off the ground. How vital is it when you drive those stones up? Because we know if it's just your arms, well, maybe some can lift, maybe not. And instruct me on this because I've never lifted them. But I'm just talking from a lifter that's lifted other stones and used, you know, my whole thing is always push through the feet, you know, grab it, explode it, you know, the whole deal. Is it the same way with the dinnies? Do you come off through the feet, obviously drive through the legs, obviously the hips engaged, and everything works like a well-oiled machine? You start pulling. Is it the same way with that, Charlie, or is it a whole different style of lift?
Well, it's really interesting that you should mention the style of lifting, because I think when I first started training, I was kind of doing it wrong.
Okay.
And I think there are easier ways to do it.
Okay.
And I think trying to avoid sort of rotation in your upper shoulders, and so if you're sort of standing between them, is not to sort of twist.
Yep.
You know, basically kind of lock. I'm kind of going through the motions as I'm.
No, that's great. Okay. That's fine.
I'd keep your back straight. So when you're sort of lifting, there's no torsion in your upper torso.
Gotcha.
You're kind of locked in the thing, because otherwise you're lifting it further and you're making it harder for yourself.
Yep.
So, and keep your back straight. Another thing as well is that the temptation would be to perhaps make your legs wider, because then you've got less height to lift.
Okay.
But you've got to offset that by you're going to have less power. So you have to have a compromise.
Very interesting.
Between having more power by having your legs closer together, because you can physically, well, in my case anyway, I think probably in most people's cases, can push up with the legs more powerfully than if they're more further apart.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to reach that sort of, the best thing that suits you. So I'd say the temptation for a lot of people would be, let's do the legs as far as possible because there's less thing to lift. But I wouldn't prescribe to that theory.
Yeah, it's just like the sumo style deadlift. You know what I mean? And I'll get right back to that. I didn't mean to run over the top of you, but you know it's real interesting when you said narrower foot stance. But what was very interesting was, We don't want to torque at the waist at all, at the hip girdle. What we want to do is stand bolt upright, basically. And the way you're going to stand bolt upright, obviously, is with a narrow stance. There's no way you're going to be able to stand bolt upright like that if you got your legs spread real far apart. Because you're right. I think you're totally right. I don't think it makes it easier. I think what it does, it diminishes your strength. But go ahead, take it. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump on it.
No, that's fine, Eric. I think the position that you envisage yourself standing in is obviously going to be the position that you lift them up from.
Yeah.
So you're really immobile. All your body is doing is pushing up, and you're staying in the same position. So obviously with the big – generally people have the larger stone in front of them, I think it's fair to say. Well, depending on which side's stronger.
Sure.
But assuming that the heaviest stone was in front of you, I think another thing you'd have to consider when you're standing up, bolt upright, is to lean back a little bit.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to – obviously, they're different weights. There's about 40 kilograms difference between them.
Okay.
And anybody who's training lifting stones or anything and they want to do something specific to the dinnies, I think it's probably important to have a different weight on each side, approximately a 40 kilogram difference, because you need to be prepared for what that feels like.
Sure.
When you lift it up and it's uneven. So leaning back, I mean, I don't know if you know Brett Nichols at all, the Nichols stones.
No, I'd like to.
I was speaking to him, and his advice was just to forget about the other stone, the lighter
really?
One. When I say lighter one, it's still obviously heavy.
Yeah.
It's just too, because that's going to come up anyway.
Yeah.
His suggestion was your focus should just be on the heavier one, and because the other one will come up anyway. if you've got the front one up.
Yeah,
the back,
but that's smart, man. That makes sense to me though. Because if you're trying to fight two big objects like that, even though it's about 80 plus pounds lighter, that is going to be more It's going to be more of a mind drain on you, number one, because you're going to be hoping to compensate for the other stone. That makes total sense because, you know, when you're lifting a bigger object of the two and you're pulling that off the ground and you can feel it coming up, it makes sense the other one's going to come up with it. The body's just going to naturally lift the other stone. So, wow, I never even thought of it like that. That's very interesting. Very.
Sorry, Eric.
No, that's all right.
Another thing to consider as well is if people have, say, David Horn replicas or they have their own stones with rings, another thing to consider about the Denny's as well is that it's kind of obvious, really, but the rings aren't central to the stone.
Okay.
So if you were, for instance, pulling away at the heaviest one at the front and you're pulling up, then don't just assume it's just going to come straight off. It might tilt to one side and then come up.
Yep.
So you've got to be prepared for that transition in weight as well.
That's very interesting because here we go now. We can hit this too. Ligaments and tendons obviously are extremely vital to build to compensate obviously for when that will tilt on you. You know, a lot of people don't work the things, whether you're doing isotonics, isometrics in the rack, you know, anything with a hold, you know, anything with a push, anything with a pull. And, you know, we got into this on a show, I don't remember who, I think it was with Bud Jeffries, how people still don't get it, how these movements still work. And, you know, they basically were around, but York Barbell in the 60s made them very famous. And think about this for a second, Charlie, because I got thinking about this one day. How many things in your life that you can think of, and I can't think of too many, that you do in a parallel position, meaning a squat position at parallel. Normally, we're maybe halfway, three-quarters of the way, or standing up straight. Now, if you really go back and think about what a power rack can do for you with an isometric, with an isotonic hold, with a partial hold, I got to believe that benefits anything we do with what we like to do. What's your take on that? And then, please, finish your sentence. I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
That's all right. I think I'd finished, Eric.
Oh, okay.
Are you sort of suggesting that in a sort of day-to-day life that there's real no need to sort of go sort of below parallel or even parallel in sort of training?
Well, no. I'm talking like everyday life. I mean, look at... I think that training these movements in a rack at all different angles obviously are very beneficial. But a lot of times when you're in stances or you've got to do things, we're not always in a parallel position. Now, when you're lifting the Denny's, you're not in a parallel position, correct? You're a little bit above, right?
You probably are. I mean, handles are, they're quite low, I guess, but yep. you probably are.
Yeah.
And obviously, the higher above parallel you are, the easier it's going to be.
Exactly, exactly. So my point is here is when you make – because what set that off of me was when you said, okay, maybe we pull the heavier first, obviously, and maybe it rocks me or tilts me a little bit to the right, then, you know, I compensate and we come up. Mm-hmm. And what I'm saying is by taking a barbell in a rack, overloading the bar – and say you're moving it only 2 inches against another rod for your isometric or your isotonic holds you want to do, and obviously just the bare brutalness of holding a large object on your body. And I see that, and I'm glad I've been doing that for a long time. When you said that, the first thing I thought was, I'm glad I'm doing those isometric holds, man. Because I'm not saying that thing's not going to rock me, but what I am saying is, hopefully, there's no injury, okay? I'm so paranoid about ligaments and tendons now, and I've always worked them, that I want the strongest areas of my body covered all the time. And I just feel, all right, so we're a little above the Denny's when we start. We're not at parallel. Okay, I've worked that area in the rack. I've done my holds. Now let's see what happens when I go to pull these off the ground. That's all I'm saying, Charlie. It's like... I'm looking for anything and everything that is going to make this body of mine as strong as it can be from head to toe. And I think there's just a lot of evidence that these things work. but there's also a lot of skepticism out there. And my advice to anybody would be, go learn about it and go do them. I'm telling you right now, you will have literally cable for ligaments and tendons. And I've seen people that do that. It looks like, you know, I've got some pretty nasty stuff popping out of my arms and everything. You look and it doesn't look normal. All right, so it takes a long time to build this stuff. But Charlie now just even reinforced my thought. This is me thinking out loud that this is the right thing to do. Comment on it if you want. I mean, I'm not trying to put you on the spot or anything, but what do you think?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you can't underestimate the strength of, you need the tendons to hold everything together. Yeah. And another thing I might throw in there as well, which I never really mentioned in the training that I'm doing at the moment, is paused reps.
Okay.
So if you try and if it's, say, doing a squat or something, we're still talking about, you know, relative positions and sort of, you know, sort of squat positions and things.
Yeah.
I'd recommend, obviously, there's a when you're coming up from a squat, there is a sticky position for most people where they can just kind of feel it. And then when they kind of go beyond that, they can kind of, it's easier at the top end is in kind of like at the middle.
Yeah.
Above the bit, obviously.
Yeah.
I would advocate trying to pause in that area.
Oh, nice.
In that area of discomfort, and just try and work through it and deliberately pause for as long as you can.
That's a great idea. Yep.
And then push up.
Yep.
Because you're kind of, you're really, really working that problem area, or that area which normally you would stay well away from or try and blast through as soon as you can.
Yep.
But I would recommend make that tough area your strong area by just basically concentrating on it. And so paused reps, I would say, are a good thing. And also things like bench press as well.
Sure.
Try and get a pause in just kind of off your chest. That's another sort of sticky area for powering through.
Yep.
But just, you know, just grin and bear it. And I think that will work wonders. I think that in terms of sort of squatting ability and bench press and even deadlifts as well, just pausing maybe just below the knee.
Sure.
Throw those in there for a bit of variation. And I think you'll reap the rewards from that.
Without a doubt. Let me ask you this. Other than family and close friends, what the hell's better than steel and stones, man? Right?
I probably couldn't say on air, Eric, but something does spring to mind. But
I'll tell you one thing, man. You talk about being blessed to do this stuff. Seriously. I hope we can get everybody in the world to try, well, I won't even say try, to do it, whether you like it or not, whether you stay with it for the rest of your life or you just don't want it, it's not for you. Because I'm telling everybody right now, you talk about a joy and an exuberance and the pain and the failure and the triumph and all the people you meet along the way and you befriend them and you compare notes and you help each other with their training. I mean, man, oh man, I played a lot of sports, but I've never met people like I've met through weight training. I'll leave it at that, because if I say every genre, we'll be here for a week. What I'm saying is, folks, if you haven't tried it, young kids, if you haven't tried it, adults that have been out of it for a long time, even our seniors who text me or email me and say, you know, we don't really have a clue to some of the stuff you're talking about, but this, they'll say to me, your passion, your personality, you know, lately I've been getting from people, we love that tough guy New York accent, and we miss it because a lot of them have lived in New York. Whatever it is here that makes you go, I'm more than happy with guys like Charlie and everybody else to spur you on, to show you that there is more to life than sitting on a couch with a bag of potato chips and your phone. And it's up to you to go out and do these marvelous things. Do you have to go to Scotland, lift the Denny's? No, you don't. But man, oh man, when you get started, how the hell wouldn't you want to? You know, Charlie, I'm sure, can attest, and I'll ask this. This will be our last question, and we'll get ready for our next show next month. Let me, you know, it's amazing to think that I started with a sand weight set that leaked all over and a wooden bench. And I've gone through the metamorphosis, and I never thought in my wildest dreams I'd be lifting stones, doing a couple voyages to Iceland, going to do another two or three. Bill Crawford told me they found some new stones in Iceland. I think they're going to go after it this summer. I'm very interested in now going after that, obviously. I think with me, it's amazing to sit here and talk to Charlie, obviously. But it's even more amazing to think sand weights have gone to stones, power racks, building stuff, creating stuff. To me, I got to pinch myself because not only am I one of the luckiest guys ever, but to think that that little weight set has got me to where I am today. I mean, I look back, I can see it in my mind's eye sitting on my cellar floor. My aunt and uncle gave it to me. My uncle was a wood shop guy, awesome builder, built that thing. That had about as much flex as a piece of cement. But you know what? Here we are today. Charlie, comment on that. I mean, obviously, I know that young kid lifting stones out on the farm, you still are. But can you believe where you are today, or did you always know this was going to happen?
Well, it seems to me, Eric, that you must have been spoilt because I never had a bench. I only had the sand weights, and it must have been quite a long time before I actually progressed onto the bench side of things.
Sure. Sure.
I could definitely draw parallels, Eric, because like you, I had a dumbbell set. It was full of sand, and it leaked everywhere.
Yep.
And it was just, you know, the sort of the plastic grips at the end to hold them on was slid all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was no knurling. There was absolutely nothing.
Yep.
And you know, if you had more than one place on each end, you could guarantee the weight of the thing was just going to send the thing flying off one end. But it was all good fun, and you know, I thought that's how everybody did it, and I thought that was normal and how you got started. But
yep.
Then, obviously, you start to learn that, you know, iron and steel is the way to go, and
sure.
and concrete for some is probably a fairly inexpensive and
yep.
effective means of providing resistance training as well.
Yep.
But yes, I mean, I feel I've done quite well, and I've progressed and learnt and accumulated quite a lot of my own equipment, which,
yep.
And we were talking about this before. I mean, obviously, you know, you can spend a lot of money on equipment and things, and I tell you, there's nothing more motivating than knowing that you've spent however much money it is on barbells and weight plates, and that they're sitting there doing nothing. You know,
yep.
you've essentially wasted a lot of money.
Yeah, absolutely.
So apart from anything else, that's a good motivator to make the most of this stuff. And the way I looked at the way I sort of legitimized it to myself to having all this equipment was in the knowledge that one day my kids might take it on.
Sure.
That's how I justified it to
yep.
myself,
yep.
because I saw it as a long-term investment, and it wouldn't just be me that would benefit, it would be the next generation that would benefit, and it's not like that the iron's going to rust away or it's going to fall to bits. It's
yeah.
all good equipment, and it should last indefinitely.
Yeah.
So I saw it as a lifestyle thing and a beneficial thing to the family as a whole.
Yeah.
So that, to me, kind of legitimized making that commitment to the stuff.
Absolutely, and I'll tell you one thing. I wish I could go back in time and bring it here and have my old sand weight, my wooden bench set here. I'd probably still mess with it. It's good stuff, let me tell you. And you got the right idea. Hopefully, your children will do it, and they'll carry on your legacy when it's their time. And, you know, the iron and the stone are going to outlive all of us, and so it's not going to really matter, you know what I mean? But, you know, it's all what you do in the time you're here, and that's the main thing. And this stuff is better than anything I've ever played with, let me tell you. And I said in the beginning, I've been a very blessed guy, and I'm very lucky. So, Charlie, give out any information you got. I'll give mine out, and hang on the line, and we'll get ready for next month, if you would, please.
Well, first of all, Eric, again, thank you very much for having me on your show, which is always a joy, and it's always interesting to hear your sort of perspective and outlook on things.
Thanks.
And I would just basically reiterate what I said the last time, that basically I think possibly people might know me more through the Ard Blair Stones.
Yep.
And if anybody would be interested in taking part in the Ard Blair Stones, which they're more than welcome to, I'd be delighted. The best thing is probably to look at the Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
So I would urge people to look at the Ard Blair Stones Facebook page if they're interested, and if they decide to like the page, then so much the better.
Yeah.
But really, I haven't got a website or anything yet, but I'm working on it.
Good.
But again, thank you very much, Eric.
You're welcome,
sir. It's been a joy
speaking
to you.
Same here. It's an honor to have you on here. This is Motivation Muscle Streaming Radio 24/7. As I said in the beginning, go out to FiorelloBarbellCo.com. Look at our three brand new products, Winner's Circle, Educator Teacher, and Etched in Stone. I feel that those three will take anybody where they want to go. And obviously, I'm here, and we're very associated with some big people with these projects. We have Dory Peterson. We have Dr. Jeffrey Smith, who's an MD in Arizona. We have Dr. William Wong. You're all familiar with him. We also going to have, I'm waiting, Steven Santangelo's on board here. He's a regular. And now we have Dale Dugas on here. Phenomenal people. And we are doing some big things. And also keep a lookout, Dennis, who I'm training. We're going to have him down from 271 to 200 pounds by the end of June. God willing, we don't know what's coming, but we're going to do everything we can to get them there, and then we're going to build upon that for the rest of the year. So keep in tune with that. Also, go out to motivationmuscle.com/category/podcast. As I said, go out and look at the shows with Charlie here. We're going to have this show up as quick as I can because we've got a lot of shows prior to this, but we also want to announce all the things we're doing. So we're going to do one new show, one older show every other day. That way everything's very current on what's going on here in Motivation Land. Go out to iTunes and Stitcher. Give us a 5-star review. That's what we've gotten. We appreciate that from everybody. Also, too, AHA. That's a directory where you can get podcasting in your car. It's AHA. All the new cars have the capability to do that, and I do believe they are now making aftermarket radios. So you go out there, search the directory for Motivation Muscle, and you got us in your car 24/7. That's a pretty good thing. If you'd like Charlie and I to do a specific show, you can contact me at FiorelloBarbell@NICAP.R.com. And if there's anything, if you can't get a hold of Charlie, you can send it there. I will forward anything for anyone to who they are. So you can always get a hold of Charlie one way or the other. There's no excuse there. Also, go out here. Well, we're going to just give you everything now. If someone seeks you out in the gym or the concrete jungle, never be afraid to give them 5 words of inspiration. 5 words can change your life forever. As my mom said when we were kids, never be afraid to say hello to someone or give them a smile. That might be all they get that day. If you're going to lift it, bend it, break it, twist it, squat it, pull it, press it, push it, whatever you want to do. If you're going to lift stones, turn them into dust. And as the great Hoosa Steel Stone Crusher says, in blood red domination, we are domination. We clear cut the path. We don't follow anyone's. Dominate, obliterate, and dent everything in your path. Obviously, as the great Russell Fur says, when he listens to our shows, he swears there's testosterone dripping out of his speakers. We will say that to the end of time. As everyone knows, Russell's been on the show, and as I said in the beginning, he's been a listener since the very beginning. No one will ever clip our balls. And as I always say, I've been very lucky with some of the people in my life, especially Frank Klein, who by far was the greatest college professor I ever had in business. Repetition, repetition, repetition. My dad, be a leader, not a follower. Be a leader, not a follower. John Ridge, my chiropractor for many years, who was like a father figure to me because I lost my dad many, many years before I lost John. And we're going on 3 years of losing John to cancer. He would walk every patient to the door and say, keep smiling. I dare you say that to yourself on your worst or best day. You will smile from ear to ear, believe me. Also, too, be a steward of strength. Don't stand on the side of the road and watch the world go by. Tell 100 of your friends because we're coming for you. We're not going to knock on your door. We're going to put our foot right through it. join our family, be part of the revolution. And as the great Les Brown says, you all have greatness in you, but we'll take it a couple steps further. We got your back, and we believe in you. And I don't know many people in today's world that would ever put an offer out like that. But then again, we're not like anybody else in the world. We are extraordinary, all of us, and you can be too. Also, I'm just trying to think. I think we are at the end. Charlie, as always, what can I tell you? It's an honor to have you on, and I love talking to you. You got a great perspective, and I hope we got 28 more years at least left in us, my friend.
Me too, Eric. And again, thanks for having me.
I love having you on. It's great. And before I sign off, I'm going to read this again. It's out of Stones of Strength, Steve Jack and the late Peter Martin, Sons of Sisyphus, page 107. Steve Jack, the struggle itself towards the heights is enough to fill a man's heart. Think about that, men and women. And when you get the answer, let us know. So, for Charlie Oliphant, this is Eric Fiorello. We'll have Charlie on next month. Thanks for listening, and go out and do something marvelous, because the world beckons you. It calls you. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.